What happened to judges appointed before the communist takeover?
Some of them were dismissed, a few of them were arrested, most of them were co-opted and continued their existence, usually to buy their sin of bourgeois past through increased militancy. That was about the fate of the judges after 1948 in Czechoslovakia.
What happened to the jury system under the communist regime?
The jury system was abolished. It was replaced by the Soviet pattern of 1+2, that is the professional judge presiding and having these two lay assessors, those so-called people's judges, with the equal vote. Hence, the party would guarantee its control, but it was a purely nominal kind of a control. And there were various devices when you can always outwit them, and in 1,000 of cases, which are more than that, not once did I had to succumb to such a pressure.
To what extent did the party interfere in the judicial process?
Well, it depended upon the nature of adjudication. Certainly in political trials, the control was total. In a criminal common adjudication, it was sporadic, but it was not absent in civil adjudication either, and that was my field. I'd say about 5% of cases where there would be this interference. But again, how many people do have to spit in your bowl of soup that you will dislike that particular dish? It did affect your entire outlook. You become your own censor, your own apparatchik. You behave and react like a cow behind the electrified fence. And this is about the particular ramification.
Can you give any particular example of where the party interfered in a civil action?
Let me put it in there. The party would interfere in civil adjudication in cases where you would have least expected. For example, I was presiding over a malpractice suit raised by a cantankerous old woman against a village physician. And the entire delegation from the Central Committee from Prague arrived at my court. I ruled against her. They didn't say a word, they didn't introduce themselves, they left, and the judgment did stand. But there was another case involving the member of the Central Committee of the party who in one village intended to evict a family so that the vacated premises can be turned over to newlyweds. The tenants were classified as class enemies, and the court had to okay this manifestly illegal measure. That was my decision, and of course the dilemma was a very uncomfortable one, because if I would not comply, I will lose the confidence of the toiling masses represented by that particular comrade. And if I would comply, I would feel very miserable with myself. And it was just at the time when my plans to vanish, to disappear from the country were coming to fruition. So I postponed the decision, I left. In that case, not an admirable action, but I didn't know what to do under those particular circumstances.
What groups of people became targets of communist attacks?
What groups of people become targets of the communist attacks? It's a seasonal affair. Of course, after the seizure of power, you go after the visible targets, the political opponents, people of the public life. Then it settles for the classical enemies, the capitalists, the stock market brokers, the real estate personnel. Then during the collectivization drive, you go after the so-called kulaks. The churches at that turn in 1950-1951. Then after the 20th Party Congress, the emerging dissidents, in those days we didn't call them dissidents, were selected. And nowadays in Prague you have the hunting season after jazzmen. So it depends on the season.
What were the purposes of the show trials in the 50s?
Purposes of the show trials were, according to the law, the purpose of punishment is to, of course, to punish the wrongdoer, to protect the society and to educate the society, to re-educate. In the case of political trials, where there were these spontaneous self-accusations and confessions to preposterous crimes, it was supposed to create the mass mobilization behind the party's policies. These were the most hideous days I truly remember. When you think of that barbarism, that children, little children, 7, 8 year old, had to write letters imploring the judge to hang those heinous types, writing poems extolling gallows and that stuff. But this happens in the midst of Europe in this century.
How powerful were the local party bosses?
The power of local party bosses is usually misunderstood by the outsiders for obvious reasons. Namely, under the veneer of totalitarian uniformity, the imprint of this or that party potentate was very significant. We used to distinguish between the so-called mild districts and wild districts. It was a true misfortune to be assigned to a court in the South Bohemian province, and it was much better to be in West Bohemian province.
In what way was it much better?
Less interference into adjudication. And for example, in my particular case, I was fortunate enough to detect the weakness of the first party secretary in the bedroom peccadilloes of his subjects. Once he called me and wanted to see the file so-and-so. It's strictly against the law to remove the court files. Therefore, I took the court files and rushed to the party secretariat, passed on that particular matter. And that was a case involving a sexually overcharged husband and perhaps a glacial wife of his, and he complained that during the intercourse, she used to read her favorite books and had nothing to do with, you know, political indoctrination. Nonetheless, the party secretary very much liked that fair and asked me to furnish him with a similar material, which I did, and that absorption on his part blunted his political Bolshevik vigilance in other spheres, and that was it.
How would, can you describe how judges were encouraged to increase their output?
Well, everything had to approximate the pattern of the production line in a factory. Therefore, you will not talk about your judicial performance, you will talk about output. There were quotas. In some respect, it was a useful innovation. That is, it did speed up the proceedings. You had, say, 1 month for a less than complicated civil law case, and it had to, if it was not disposed of, you had to report it. Why? Or, say, 2 months for a paternity case. But we were those who were in charge, those who wanted to excel and who wanted to appear in a nice light, they invented cases. Say you will receive a patently absurd litigation proposal. In the old days, you threw it out, or you called that person and said, listen, they will never, you have no chance, goodbye. This time it will get its number, it will be entered into the ledgers, and then it will be dismissed. Or say you have a case of a pilferage of socialist property by 10 co-employees, and instead of making it one case, as in the old days, you made 10 separate cases.
How did the class origins of people affect the judgments made against them in courts?
Well, in some cases, for example, there was a felony of non-delivery of agricultural quotas. In other words, bad harvest or whatever goes wrong, you are not able to deliver what you are supposed to deliver. Classification of that failure was strictly dependent upon that class determination. If it was a so-called small farmer, so it was a misdemeanor, a nominal fine. If it was a kulak, it was charged as sabotage, and you might have even lost your life.
To what extent is a slip of the tongue, or saying something about the wrong person in the party, have great consequences?
Well, yeah, a slip of the tongue. The Czech penal code includes, I think, some 17 different felonies. These so-called verbal felonies. That means you can get drunk and in a moment you will be a multiple felon. It depends where you say it, in front of whom you say it, and also what is your reputation. Oh, for example, we had in our district a former member of the Communist Party who even ran for the parliament in the old Bourgeois Republic. But the moment the party gained power, he detested it very substantially. And wherever he went, he, of course, was cursing the establishment. We also had one charming gentleman, the only owner of a ponytail, and he was wearing a big faded flower on his faded jacket. Some local enthusiasts were making a movie, Mozart in Pilsen, and he was Mozart. He was a man who thought he was living in the 18th century, and he hated, for some reason, social democrats. And wherever he went, he would be cursing them. Obviously, these people were not touched by anyone.
Oh. Can I ask you, to what extent is society being depoliticized?
Society is being depoliticized nowadays under the conditions of a so-called normalization. Because the party realized that those who read Marx, who really are involved in the ideology, they may want to change the reality, which certainly does not conform with the ideological premises. It's better to have a society anesthetized. It is that social contract. I rule, and you, for not meddling into my ruling, will be left alone. I don't want you to love me. I insist, however, to keep up appearances. And you are left with your little petty bourgeois pleasures, country house, car, a dachshund, a mistress. You may steal from the state up to a point when it doesn't become much too obvious.
Do you think Gorbachev is going to help liberate Eastern Europe?
During my last exam at the university, I received in Marxism-Leninism, I received two questions. One I passed, the question was 100 times nothing killed a donkey. Explain in terms of Marxist dialectics. It's very simple. Third laws of dialectics according to Stalin, accumulated quantity creates a new quality. And the second question was, what is the basic criterion of a true communist? And I stared, didn't know, and the dismayed examiner said, well, so obvious. The love for the Soviet Union, hence the Soviet Union, the model. However, now, today, this particle slogan is being considered to be subversive.
Did the party sometimes decide what the court's judgment should be in advance?
In the political cases of prime importance, the things were decided ahead of the trial. The judges strictly follow the party rules, and this were, of course, the few select judges who operated those special tribunals. In other cases, it would be presented in a form of the so-called suggestion. The party would suggest this or that. In cases of show trials, say on a provincial level, let us say that there will be an alarming increase of pilferage in restaurants. So you will pick up an exemplary case of a greedy restaurateur. He will be put on trial. They will put into the audience 500 frightened colleagues of his. And of course, such a trial then ceases to be a trial with the opportunity of an appeal, because it's already covered by the media. It is something which is kind of predestined. Obviously, their impartiality is not in part of it at all. And basically, here the court is fulfilling that role of re-educating the public to scare those potential wrongdoers from following the same perilous path.
Can you give an example of how people, citizens, actually use this politicization of the system?
Yeah, that is also something which surprised me rather substantially when I appeared at the court, that the rules of the game imposed by the state are then used by the people themselves in their perhaps mistaken and certainly not very admirable belief to their advantage. Let us say you are presiding over a case of a divorced couple over the custody of their child. Both of them want their child because if you have the child in your care, your tax bracket is lower, the state paid allowance is fairly high, and the other parent has to pay the support, and you shove the baby to a mother, he will stay with the granny, and that's it. Both of those parents have the same case. There are no particle minuses or pluses on either side. Therefore, the ex-husband may appear in the court dressed in overalls. He may present himself in a badly imitated proletarian accent. He may accuse his ex-wife of harboring pernicious religious thought, which may undermine proper upbringing of the child. He may even go through the old amorous correspondence of theirs, where there may be a phrase that may be considered of anti-state orientation. So you never knew what may really happen. And occasionally, suddenly, I recall very vividly a case when an enraged husband used a preposterous parallel of an innocent victim in that particular marriage and says, I am like South Korea, which was attacked by the aggressive North Korea, but truth will prevail, United States will win, and these kind of things. Well, obviously, you could not let it go further on, so I interrupted him and I called for the recess, and I had to calm down the people's assessors, those alleged watchdogs of ours, to explain that this was not an intentional act to undermine the prestige of the Soviet Union, but merely an aberration of a highly agitated fool.
How did the communists make sure that there were loyal people inside the judicial system?
The party, of course, did not trust the judges. They tried to have that element of popular control over them in the form of the so-called lay assessors or people's judges, and each trial to be decided in original jurisdiction by the presiding professional judge and two of these lay assessors. All votes being equal means that they can always outvote me. It hasn't happened in a single case. Because I had on my list some 60 lay assessors. Each of them will be called twice a year. Let us say that both of them start to misbehave or would try to push me into a decision which I would find unacceptable. So I always find a reason to adjourn. You adjourn the case, and for the next session you cannot wait half a year because we have our quotas to deliver, you will summon a more amenable pair of lay assessors who will comply with what you have to do. After the party took over power in the country, of course, it took a while before they will be embedded and entrenched in every sphere of public life. Say in the secret police, it was right away, actually, they were there before they seized power. And in the judiciary, it went fairly fast, but they decided, of course, not to wait for 4 years before the crop of new graduates from the law school will appear. And they set up a strange kind of a school, which was called the law school of the working class, something of that sort, which lasted for about 10 months, 10 to 12 months, and there carefully picked up proletarians. Party members were trained in the matters of law, with the kind of a training for which you have to have a solid undergraduate education and spend 4 years at the law school. So they were sort of well-versed with the text, but, for example, they did not manage the Czech grammar. They were hopefully inarticulate. Many of them suffered enormous inferiority complexes, well-deserved so. By the way, one of those judges, I recall his name is Jan Reut, is now a very prominent judge who is being assigned to those political cases over the dissenters in Prague.
To what extent did you have to learn to read between the lines what the party codes were, what the party line was?
As it is with foreign languages, had I come to an English-speaking environment at my age of 16, 17, 18, 19, I would not speak with that preposterous Siberian accent of mine as I do today. To that Marxist-Leninist jargon, with its improbable ornate epithet, you had to really absorb it into your bloodstream so it will flow very naturally from your lips. But the older generation, the old judges who tried so hard to emulate that party language, there was always that falseness of that accent, the wrongly placed epithet. And the party was very, very sensitive about these matters. Somehow this totalitarian system in those days, when they still wanted your soul, they behaved like a very jealous, very suspicious, substantially paranoid aging wife with plenty of those inferiority complexes. And there, a shallow individual can apply only shallow criteria of judgment. Therefore, if I would have some flamboyant pattern on my tie, they may draw an absolute conclusion out of that, that indeed I may be disloyal to the system. We used to get letters which we solicited from a local administration as with regard to the reputation and socialist profile of the people. And I recall once the following statement came. We strongly object against citizen X to be awarded custody of his child because of his ties with apes or monkeys, opicenche, which is an evidence sufficient enough that he doesn't mean that he is not very sincere about building communism. Because communism is not gallows and suppression and terror, but above all, it is a monumental boredom. That's the main reason why I lied. I was terribly bored there. People with original mind can't stand it. Getting out of your mind, time stops. Any attempt to be witty or sense of humor is subversive in that anti-hedonistic, semi-Calvinistic, austere setting. But again, that is already a matter of the past, because in the post-invasion period, in those days, in these days, when no one wants your soul and you have plenty of outlets in alcohol and promiscuity. And I understand that there is no place more pleasantly hedonistic and immoral these days than old Prague.
Thank you very much.